When the pressure of their connecting link is too great, sorcerers relieve it by stocking themselves. Stocking is a procedure, a very simple one. Stocking is special behavior that follows certain principles. It is secretive, furtive, deceptive behavior designed to deliver a jolt. And when you stalk yourself, you jolt yourself, using your own behavior in a ruthless, cunning way. When a sorcerer's awareness becomes bogged down with the weight of his perceptual input, the best, or even perhaps the only, remedy is to use the idea of death to deliver that stalking jolt. The idea of death, therefore, is of monumental importance in the life of a sorcerer. I have shown you innumerable things about death to convince you that the knowledge of our impending and unavoidable end is what gives us sobriety. Our most costly mistake as average men is indulging in a sense of immortality. It is as though we believe that if we don't think about death, we can protect ourselves from it. Not thinking about death protects us from worrying about it, but that purpose is an unworthy one for the average man and a travesty for sorcerers. Without a clear view of death, there is no order, no sobriety, no beauty. Sorcerers struggle to gain this crucial insight in order to help them realize at the deepest possible level that they have no assurance whatsoever their lives will continue beyond the moment. That realization gives sorcerers the courage to be patient and yet take action, courage to be acquiescent without being stupid. The idea of death is the only thing that can give sorcerers courage. Strange, isn't it? It gives sorcerers the courage to be cunning without being conceited, and above all, it gives them courage to be ruthless without being self-important. Sorcerers stalk themselves in order to break the power of their obsessions. There are many ways of stalking oneself. If you don't want to use the idea of your death, you can use poems to stalk yourself. I stalk myself with them. I deliver a jolt to myself with them. I listen and shut off my internal dialogue and let my inner silence gain momentum. Then the combination of the poem and the silence delivers the jolt. See if you can feel what I'm talking about with this poem by José Gorestiza. This incessant stubborn dying, this living death that slays you, O God, in your rigorous handiwork, in the roses, in the stones, in the indomitable stars, and in the flash that burns out like a bonfire lit by a song, a dream, a hue that hits the eye. And you, yourself, perhaps have died eternities of ages out there without us knowing about it. We dregs, crumbs, ashes of you. You that still are present, like a star faked by its very light, an empty light without star, that reaches us, hiding its infinite catastrophe. As I hear the words, I feel that that man is seeing the essence of things, and I can see with him. I care only about the feeling the poet's longing brings me. I borrow his longing, and with it, I borrow the beauty, and marvel at the fact that he, like a true warrior, lavishes it on the recipients, the beholders, retaining for himself only his longing. This jolt, this shock of beauty, is stalking. Death is not an enemy, although it appears to be. Death is not our destroyer, although we think it is. Sorcerers say death is the only worthy opponent we have. Death is our challenger. We are born to take that challenge, average men or sorcerers. Sorcerers know about it. Average men do not. Life is the process by means of which death challenges us. Death is the active force. Life is the arena. And in that arena, there are only two contenders at any time, oneself and death. We are passive. Think about it. If we move, it's only when we feel the pressure of death. Death sets the pace for our actions and feelings and pushes us relentlessly until it breaks us and wins the bout, or else we rise above all possibilities and defeat death. Sorcerers defeat death, and death acknowledges the defeat by letting the sorcerers go free, never to be challenged again. Death stops challenging them. It means thought has taken a somersault into the inconceivable. A somersault of thought into the inconceivable is the descent of the spirit, the act of breaking our perceptual barriers. It is the moment in which man's perception reaches its limits. Sorcerers practice the art of sending scouts, advance runners, to probe our perceptual limits. This is another reason I like poems. I take them as advance runners. But poets don't know as exactly as sorcerers what those advance runners can accomplish. As the energy that is ordinarily used to maintain the fixed position of the assemblage point becomes liberated, it focuses automatically on that connecting link. There are no techniques or maneuvers for a sorcerer to learn beforehand to move energy from one place to the other. Rather, it is a matter of an instantaneous shift taking place once a certain level of proficiency has been attained. The level of proficiency is pure understanding. In order to attain that instantaneous shift of energy, one needs a clear connection with intent. And to get a clear connection, one needs only to intend it through pure understanding. Pure understanding is a sorcerer's advance runner probing that immensity out there. The nature of ruthlessness is that it is the opposite of self-pity. All sorcerers are ruthless. As I have said, the fourth abstract core of the sorcery stories is called the descent of the spirit, or being moved by intent. In order to let the mysteries of sorcery reveal themselves, it is necessary for the spirit to descend. The spirit chooses a moment when a man is distracted, unguarded, and showing no pity, the spirit lets its presence by itself move the man's assemblage point to a specific position. This spot is known to sorcerers as the place of no pity. Ruthlessness becomes, in this way, the first principle of sorcery. The first principle should not be confused with the first effect of sorcery apprenticeship, which is the shift between normal and heightened awareness. To all appearances, having the assemblage point shift is the first thing that actually happens to a sorcery apprentice. So it is only natural for an apprentice to assume that this is the first principle of sorcery, but it is not. Ruthlessness is the first principle of sorcery. What we need to do to allow magic to get hold of us is to banish doubt from our minds. Once doubts are banished, anything is possible. Stop thinking by intending the movement of your assemblage point. Intent is beckoned with the eyes. The place of no pity is the site of ruthlessness. Let's say that ruthlessness, being a specific position of the assemblage point, is shown in the eyes of sorcerers. It's like a shimmering film over the eyes. The eyes of sorcerers are brilliant. The greater the shine, the more ruthless the sorcerer is. When the assemblage point moves to the place of no pity, the eyes begin to shine. The firmer the grip of the assemblage point on its new position, the more the eyes shine. A recapitulation of their lives, which sorcerers do, is the key to moving their assemblage points. Sorcerers start their recapitulation by thinking, by remembering the most important acts of their lives. From merely thinking about them, they then move on to actually being at the site of the event. When they can do that, be at the site of the event, they have successfully shifted their assemblage point to the precise spot it was when the event took place. Bringing back the total event by means of shifting the assemblage point is known as sorcerer's recollection. Recollecting is not the same as remembering. Remembering is dictated by the day-to-day type of thinking, while recollecting is dictated by the movement of the assemblage point. Our assemblage points are constantly shifting, imperceptible shifts. In order to make our assemblage point shift to precise spots, we must engage intent. Since there is no way of knowing what intent is, sorcerers let their eyes beckon it. What you feel and interpret as longing is in fact the sudden movement of your assemblage point. Ruthlessness makes sorcerers' eyes shine, and that shine beckons intent. Each spot to which their assemblage points move is indicated by a specific shine of their eyes. Since their eyes have their own memory, they can call up the recollection of any spot by calling up the specific shine associated with that spot. The reason sorcerers put so much emphasis on the shine of their eyes and on their gaze is because the eyes are directly connected to intent. Contradictory as it might sound, the truth is that the eyes are only superficially connected to the world of everyday life. Their deeper connection is to the abstract. Man's possibilities are so vast and mysterious that sorcerers, rather than thinking about them, have chosen to explore them with no hope of ever understanding them. The only advantages sorcerers may have over average men is that they have stored their energy, which means a more precise, clear connecting link with intent. Naturally, it also means they can recollect at will, using the shine of their eyes to move their assemblage points. Be a paragon of patience and consistency by fighting for impeccability. Transform yourself daily, restraining yourself with the most excruciating effort. It is a rare opportunity for a warrior to be given a genuine chance to be impeccable in spite of his basic feelings. The act of giving freely and impeccably rejuvenates you and renews your wonder. The eyes of all living beings can move someone else's assemblage point, especially if their eyes are focused on intent. Under normal conditions, however, people's eyes are focused on the world, looking for food, looking for shelter. For sorcerers to use the shine of their eyes to move their own or anyone else's assemblage point, they have to be ruthless. That is, they have to be familiar with that specific position of the assemblage point called the place of no pity. This is especially true for the Nahuals. Each Nahual develops a brand of ruthlessness specific to him alone. Nahuals mask their ruthlessness automatically, even against their will. I'm not a rational man. I only appear to be because my mask is so effective. What you perceive as reasonableness is my lack of pity. Because that's what ruthlessness is, a total lack of pity. Move your assemblage point to the precise spot where pity disappears. That spot is known as the place of no pity. The problem that sorcerers have to solve is that the place of no pity has to be reached with only minimal help. Everything sorcerers do is done as a consequence of a movement of their assemblage points, and such movements are ruled by the amount of energy sorcerers have at their command. Inside every human being is a gigantic, dark lake of silent knowledge, which each of us could intuit. Sorcerers are the only beings on earth who deliberately go beyond the intuitive level by training themselves to do two transcendental things. First, to conceive of the existence of the assemblage point, and second, to make that assemblage point move. The most sophisticated knowledge sorcerers possess is of our potential as perceiving beings, and the knowledge that the content of perception depends on the position of the assemblage point. Enjoy things with no expectation. When the assemblage point moves and reaches the place of no pity, the position of rationality and common sense becomes weak. Silent knowledge is something that all of us have, something that has complete mastery, complete knowledge of everything. But it cannot think, therefore it cannot speak of what is known. Sorcerers believe that when man became aware that he knew, he wanted to be conscious of what he knew. He lost sight of what he knew. This silent knowledge, which you cannot describe, is, of course, intent, the spirit, the abstract. Man's error was to want to know it directly, the way he knew everyday life. The more he wanted, the more ephemeral it became. Man gave up silent knowledge for the world of reason. The more he clings to the world of reason, the more ephemeral intent becomes. The origin of the anxiety that overtakes an apprentice with the speed of wildfire is the sudden movement of his assemblage point. Get used to the idea of recurrent attacks of anxiety because your assemblage point is going to keep moving. Any movement of the assemblage point is like dying. Everything in us gets disconnected, then reconnected again to a source of much greater power. That amplification of energy is felt like a killing anxiety. When this happens, just wait. The outburst of energy will pass. What's dangerous is not knowing what is happening to you. Once you know, there is no real danger. Ancient men knew, in the most direct fashion, what to do and how best to do it. But because he performed so well, he started to develop a sense of selfness, which gave him the feeling that he could predict and plan the actions he was used to performing. And thus the idea of an individual self appeared, an individual self which began to dictate the nature and scope of man's actions. As the feeling of the individual self became stronger, man lost his natural connection to silent knowledge. Modern man, being heir to that development, therefore finds himself so hopelessly removed from the source of everything that all he can do is express his despair in violent and cynical acts of self-destruction. The reason for man's cynicism and despair is the bit of silent knowledge left in him, which does two things. One, it gives man an inkling of his ancient connection to the source of everything. And two, it makes man feel that without this connection, he has no hope of peace, of satisfaction, of attainment. War is the natural state for a warrior, and peace is an anomaly. But war for a warrior doesn't mean acts of individual or collective stupidity or wanton violence. War for a warrior is the total struggle against that individual self that has deprived man of his power. Ruthlessness is the most basic premise of sorcery. Any movement of the assemblage point means a movement away from the excessive concern with the individual self. Self-importance is the force generated by man's self-image. It is that force which keeps the assemblage point fixed where it is at present. For this reason, the thrust of the warrior's way is to dethrone self-importance, and everything sorcerers do is toward accomplishing this goal. Sorcerers have unmasked self-importance and found that it is self-pity masquerading as something else. It doesn't sound possible, but that is what it is. Self-pity is the real enemy and the source of man's misery. Without a degree of pity for himself, man could not afford to be as self-important as he is. However, once the force of self-importance is engaged, it develops its own momentum, and it is this seemingly independent nature of self-importance which gives it its fake sense of worth. Sorcerers are absolutely convinced that by moving their assemblage points away from their customary position, we achieve a state of being which could only be called ruthlessness. Sorcerers know, by means of their practical actions, that as soon as their assemblage points move, their self-importance crumbles. Without the customary position of their assemblage points, their self-image can no longer be sustained, and without the heavy focus on that self-image, they lose their self-compassion, and with it, their self-importance. Sorcerers are right, therefore, in saying that self-importance is merely self-pity in disguise. A Nahual in his role as leader or teacher has to behave in the most efficient, but at the same time, most impeccable way. Since it is not possible for him to plan the course of his actions rationally, the Nahual always lets the spirit decide his course. The position of self-reflection forces the assemblage point to assemble a world of sham compassion, but of very real cruelty and self-centeredness. In that world, the only real feelings are those convenient for the one who feels them. For a sorcerer, ruthlessness is not cruelty. Ruthlessness is the opposite of self-pity or self-importance. Ruthlessness is sobriety. Sorcerers' increased energy, derived from the curtailment of their self-reflection, allows their senses a greater range of perception. The only worthwhile course of action, whether for sorcerers or average men, is to restrict our involvement with our self-image. What a Nahual aims at with his apprentices is the shattering of their mirror of self-reflection. Each of us has a different degree of attachment to his self-reflection, and that attachment is felt as need. It is possible for sorcerers or average men to need no one, to get peace, harmony, laughter, knowledge directly from the spirit. To need no intermediaries. For you and for me, it's different. I'm your intermediary, and my teacher was mine. Intermediaries, besides providing a minimal chance, the awareness of intent, help shatter people's mirrors of self-reflection. The only concrete help you ever get from me is that I attack your self-reflection. If it weren't for that, you would be wasting your time. This is the only real help you've gotten from me. I've taught you all kinds of things in order to trap your attention. You'll swear, though, that that teaching has been the important part. It hasn't. There is very little value in instruction. Sorcerers maintain that moving the assemblage point is all that matters, and that movement depends on increased energy and not on instruction. Any human being who would follow a specific and simple sequence of actions can learn to move his assemblage point. The sequence of actions I'm talking about is one that stems from being aware. The Nahual provides the minimal chance, but that minimal chance is not instruction, like the instruction you need to learn to operate a machine. The minimal chance consists of being made aware of the spirit. The specific sequence I have in mind calls for being aware that self-importance is the force which keeps the assemblage point fixed. When self-importance is curtailed, the energy it requires is no longer expended. That increased energy then serves as the springboard that launches the assemblage point automatically and without premeditation into an inconceivable journey. Once the assemblage point has moved, the movement itself entails moving from self-reflection, and this in turn assures a clear connecting link with the Spirit. After all, it is self-reflection that has disconnected man from the Spirit in the first place. As I have already said to you, sorcery is a journey of return. We return victorious to the Spirit, having descended into hell, and from hell we bring trophies. Understanding is one of our trophies. Our difficulty with this simple progression is that most of us are unwilling to accept that we need so little to get on with. We are geared to expect instruction, teaching, guides, masters. And when we are told that we need no one, we don't believe it. We become nervous, then distrustful, and finally angry and disappointed. If we need help, it is not in methods, but in emphasis. If someone makes us aware that we need to curtail our self-importance, that help is real. Sorcerers say we should need no one to convince us that the world is infinitely more complex than our wildest fantasies. So why are we dependent? Why do we crave someone to guide us when we can do it ourselves? Big question, eh? The Spirit moves the assemblage point. I have insisted to the point of exhaustion that there are no procedures in sorcery. There are no methods, no steps. The only thing that matters is the movement of the assemblage point, and no procedure can cause that. It's an effect that happens all by itself. The Nahual entices the assemblage point into moving by helping to destroy the mirror of self-reflection, but that is all the Nahual can do. The actual mover is the Spirit, the abstract, something that cannot be seen or felt, something that does not seem to exist and yet does. For this reason, sorcerers report that the assemblage point moves all by itself. Because the Spirit has no perceivable essence, sorcerers deal rather with the specific instances and ways in which they are able to shadow the mirror of self-reflection. The world of our self-reflection, or of our mind, is very flimsy and is held together by a few key ideas that serve as its underlying order. When those ideas fail, the underlying order ceases to function. Continuity is the key idea. Continuity is the idea that we are a solid block. In our minds, what sustains our world is the certainty that we are unchangeable. I have described to you in the past the concept of stopping the world, and that it is as necessary for sorcerers as reading and writing are for the average man. It consists of introducing a dissonant element into the fabric of everyday behavior for purposes of halting the otherwise smooth flow of ordinary events, events which are cataloged in our minds by our reason. The dissonant element is called not doing, or the opposite of doing. Doing is anything that is part of a whole for which we have a cognitive account. Not doing is an element that does not belong to that charted whole. Sorcerers, because they are stalkers, understand human behavior to perfection. They understand, for instance, that human beings are creatures of inventory. Knowing the ins and outs of a particular inventory is what makes a man a scholar or an expert in his field. Sorcerers know that when an average person's inventory fails, the person either enlarges his inventory or his world of self-reflection collapses. The average person is willing to incorporate new items into his inventory if they don't contradict the inventory's underlying order. But if the items contradict that order, the person's mind collapses. The inventory is the mind. Sorcerers count on this when they attempt to break the mirror of self-reflection. Intent is intended with the eyes. I know that it is so, yet, just like you, I can't pinpoint what it is I know. Sorcerers resolve this particular difficulty by accepting something extremely obvious. Human beings are infinitely more complex and mysterious than our wildest fantasies. All I can say is that the eyes do it. I don't know how, but they do it. They summon intent with something indefinable that they have, something in their shine. Sorcerers say that intent is experienced with the eyes, not with the reason. Continuity is so important in our lives that if it breaks, it's always instantly repaired. In the case of sorcerers, however, once their assemblage points reach the place of no pity, continuity is never the same. You are dealing with a new type of continuity. It takes time to get used to it. Warriors spend years in limbo, where they are neither average men nor sorcerers. The difficulty is that the mirror of self-reflection is extremely powerful and only lets its victims go after a ferocious struggle. There is something called a silent protector. It is a lifesaver, a surge of inexplicable energy that comes to a warrior when nothing else works. Sorcerer's options are silent protectors. They are positions of the assemblage point. The infinite number of positions which the assemblage point can reach. In each and every one of those shallow or deep shifts, a sorcerer can strengthen his new continuity. The effect of those shifts of the assemblage point is cumulative. It weighs on you whether you understand it or not. Don't wish for death. Just wait until it comes. Don't try to imagine what it's like. Just be there to be caught in its flow. The sorcerer's struggle for assuredness is the most dramatic struggle there is. It's painful and costly. Many, many times it has actually cost sorcerers their lives. In order for any sorcerer to have complete certainty about his actions or about his position in the sorcerer's world, or to be capable of utilizing intelligently his new continuity, he must invalidate the continuity of his old life. Only then can his actions have the necessary assuredness to fortify and balance the tenuousness and instability of his new continuity. The sorcerer seers of modern times call this process of invalidation the ticket to impeccability, or the sorcerer's symbolic but final death. Sorcerers have a peculiar bent. They live exclusively in the twilight of a feeling best described by the words, "and yet." When everything is crumbling down around them, sorcerers accept that the situation is terrible, and then immediately escape to the twilight of, "and yet." Warriors do their utmost, and then, without any remorse or regrets, they relax and let the spirit decide the outcome. The decision of the spirit is another basic core. Sorcery stories are built around it. A sorcerer's ticket to freedom is his death. I myself have paid with my life for that ticket to freedom, as has everyone else in my household. And now we are equals in our condition of being dead. You too are dead. The sorcerer's grand ticket, however, is to be aware that they are dead. Their ticket to impeccability must be wrapped in awareness. In that wrapping, sorcerers say their ticket is kept in mint condition. Explanations are never wasted, because they are imprinted in us for immediate or later use, or to help prepare our way to reaching silent knowledge. Silent knowledge is a general position of the assemblage point. Ages ago, it was man's normal position, but for reasons which would be impossible to determine, man's assemblage point moved away from that specific location and adopted a new one called reason. The place of no pity, being another position of the assemblage point, is the forerunner of silent knowledge, and yet another position of the assemblage point, called the place of concern, is the forerunner of reason. Death is painful only when it happens in one's bed, in sickness. In a fight for your life, you feel no pain. If you feel anything, it's exaltation. One of the most dramatic differences between civilized men and sorcerers is the way in which death comes to them. Only with sorcerer warriors is death kind and sweet. They could be mortally wounded and yet would feel no pain. And what is even more extraordinary is that death holds itself in abeyance for as long as the sorcerers need it to do so. The greatest difference between an average man and a sorcerer is that a sorcerer commands his death with his speed. In the world of everyday life, our word or our decisions can be reversed very easily. The only irrevocable thing in our world is death. In the sorcerer's world, on the other hand, normal death can be countermanded, but not the sorcerer's word. In the sorcerer's world, decisions cannot be changed or reversed. Once they have been made, they stand forever. For a seer, human beings are either oblong or spherical luminous masses of countless static yet vibrant fields of energy. and only sorcerers are capable of injecting movement into those spheres of static luminosity. In a millisecond, they can move their assemblage points to any place in their luminous mass. That movement, and the speed with which it is performed, entails an instantaneous shift into the perception of another totally different universe. Or, they can move their assemblage points, without stopping, across their entire field of luminous energy. The force created by such movement is so intense that it instantly consumes their whole luminous mass. Possibly every human being under normal living conditions has had at one time or another the opportunity to break away from the bindings of convention. I don't mean social convention, but the conventions binding our perception. A moment of elation would suffice to move our assemblage points and break our conventions. So too a moment of fright, ill health, anger, or grief. But ordinarily, whenever we have the chance to move our assemblage points, we become frightened. Our religious, academic, social backgrounds come into play. They assure our safe return to the flock, the return of our assemblage points to the prescribed position of normal living. All the mystics and spiritual teachers you know have done just that. Their assemblage points have moved, either through discipline or accident, to a certain point, and then they return to normalcy, carrying a memory that lasted them a lifetime. The average man, incapable of finding the energy to perceive beyond his daily limits, calls the realm of extraordinary perception sorcery, witchcraft, or the work of the devil, and shies away from it without examining it further. Turn everything into what it really is, the abstract, the spirit, the Nahual. There is no witchcraft, no evil, no devil. There is only perception. Your assemblage point can move beyond the place of no pity into the place of silent knowledge. To manipulate it yourself means to have enough energy to move between reason and silent knowledge at will. If a sorcerer has enough energy, or even if he does not have sufficient energy but needs to shift because it is a matter of life and death, he can fluctuate between reason and silent knowledge. At this stage in your development, any movement of your assemblage point will still be a mystery. Your challenge at the beginning of your apprenticeship is maintaining your gains rather than reasoning them out. At some point, everything will make sense to you. You have to be able to explain knowledge to yourself before you can claim that it makes sense to you. For a movement of your assemblage point to make sense, you will need to have energy to fluctuate from the place of reason to the place of silent knowledge. Your assemblage point can move by itself. You can intend the movement by manipulating certain feelings, and in so doing, your assemblage point can reach the position of silent knowledge. One way to talk about the perception attained in the place of silent knowledge is to call it here and here. Intending the movement of the assemblage point is a great accomplishment, but accomplishment is something personal. It's necessary, but it's not the important part. It is not the residue sorcerers look forward to. The idea of the abstract, the spirit, is the only residue that is important. The idea of the personal self has no value whatsoever. Every time I've had the chance, I have made you aware of the need to abstract. You have always believed that I meant to think abstractly. No, to abstract means to make yourself available to the spirit by being aware of it. One of the most dramatic things about the human condition is the macabre connection between stupidity and self-reflection. It is stupidity that forces us to discard anything that does not conform with our self-reflective expectations. For example, as average men, we are blind to the most crucial piece of knowledge available to the human being, the existence of the assemblage point and the fact that it can move. For a rational man, it's unthinkable that there should be an invisible point where perception is assembled. For the rational man to hold steadfastly to his self-image ensures his abysmal ignorance. He ignores, for instance, the fact that sorcery is not incantations and hocus-pocus, but the freedom to perceive not only the world taken for granted, but everything else that is humanly possible. Here is where the average man's stupidity is most dangerous. He is afraid of sorcery. He trembles at the possibility of freedom. And freedom is at his fingertips. It's called the third point, and it can be reached as easily as the assemblage point can be made to move. This is another of the sorcerer's contradictions. It's very difficult, and yet it is the simplest thing in the world. I've told you already that a high fever could move the assemblage point. Hunger, or fear, or love, or hate could do it. Mysticism, too, and also unbending intent, which is the preferred method of sorcerers. Unbending intent is a sort of single-mindedness human beings exhibit, an extremely well-defined purpose not countermanded by any conflicting interests or desires. Unbending intent is also the force engendered when the assemblage point is maintained fixed in a position which is not the usual one. The distinction between a movement and a shift of the assemblage point is that a movement is a profound change of position, so extreme that the assemblage point might even reach other bands of energy within our total luminous mass of energy fields. Each band of energy represents a completely different universe to be perceived. A shift, however, is a small movement within the band of energy fields we perceive as the world of everyday life. Sorcerers see unbending intent as the catalyst to trigger their unchangeable decisions, or as the converse. Their unchangeable decisions are the catalyst that propels their assemblage points to new positions, positions which in turn generate unbending intent. Trying to reason out the sorcerer's metaphorical descriptions is as useless as trying to reason out silent knowledge. The world of everyday life consists of two points of reference. We have, for example, here and there, in and out, up and down, good and evil, and so on and so forth. So properly speaking, our perception of our lives is two-dimensional. None of what we perceive ourselves doing has depth. A sorcerer perceives his actions with depth. His actions are tri-dimensional for him. They have a third point of reference. Our points of reference are obtained primarily from our sense perception. Our senses perceive and differentiate what is immediate to us from what is not. Using that basic distinction, we derive the rest. In order to reach the third point of reference, one must perceive two places at once. Normal perception has an axis, here and there, are the perimeters of that axis, and we are partial to the clarity of here. In normal perception, only here is perceived completely, instantaneously, and directly. Its twin referent, there, lacks immediacy. It is inferred, deduced, expected, even assumed, but it is not apprehended directly with all the senses. When we perceive two places at once, total clarity is lost, but the immediate perception of there is gained. A sorcerer, because he has a connecting link with intent, sees an oddity as a vehicle to perceiving, not an oddity, but a source of awe. Only sorcerers can turn their feelings into intent. Intent is the spirit. So it is the spirit which moves the assemblage points. The misleading part of all this is that I am saying only sorcerers know about the spirit, and that intent is the exclusive domain of sorcerers. This is not true at all, but it is the situation in the realm of practicality. The real condition is that sorcerers are more aware of their connection with the spirit than the average man, and strive to manipulate it. That's all. I've already told you, the connecting link with intent is the universal feature shared by everything there is. Being in two places at once is a milestone sorcerers use to mark the moment the assemblage point reaches the place of silent knowledge. Split perception, if accomplished by one's own means, is called the free movement of the assemblage point. Every apprentice must consistently do everything within his power to encourage the free movement of his assemblage point. This all-out effort is cryptically called reaching out for the third point. The third point of reference is freedom of perception. It is intent. It is the spirit, the somersault of thought into the miraculous, the act of reaching beyond our boundaries and touching the inconceivable. To discover the possibility of being in two places at once is very exciting to the mind, since our minds are our rationality, and our rationality is our self-reflection. Everything beyond our self-reflection either appalls us or attracts us, depending on what kind of persons we are. In terms of his connection with intent, a warrior goes through four stages. The first is when he has a rusty, untrustworthy link with intent. The second is when he succeeds in cleaning it. The third is when he learns to manipulate it, and the fourth is when he learns to accept the designs of the abstract. Your disadvantage in the sorcerer's world is your lack of familiarity with it. In that world, you have to relate yourself to everything in a new way, which is infinitely more difficult because it has very little to do with your everyday life continuity. The specific problem of sorcerers is twofold. One is the impossibility of restoring a shattered continuity. The other is the impossibility of using the continuity dictated by the new position of their assemblage points. That new continuity is always too tenuous, too unstable, and does not offer sorcerers the assuredness they need to function as if they were in the world of everyday life. Sorcerers don't resolve this problem. The spirit either resolves it for us or it doesn't. If it does, a sorcerer finds himself acting in the sorcerer's world, but without knowing how. This is the reason why I have insisted from the day I found you that impeccability is all that counts. A sorcerer lives an impeccable life, and that seems to beckon the solution. Why? No one knows. Impeccability, as I have told you so many times, is not morality. It only resembles morality. Impeccability is simply the best use of our energy level. Naturally, it calls for frugality, thoughtfulness, simplicity, innocence, and above all, it calls for lack of self-reflection. All this makes it sound like a manual for monastic life, but it isn't. Sorcerers say that in order to command the spirit, and by that they mean to command the movement of the assemblage point, one needs energy. The only thing that stores energy for us is our impeccability. We do not have to be students of sorcery to move our assemblage point. Sometimes, due to natural, although dramatic circumstances such as war, deprivation, stress, fatigue, sorrow, helplessness, men's assemblage points undergo profound movements. If the men who find themselves in such circumstances were able to adopt a sorcerer's ideology, they would be able to maximize that natural movement with no trouble, and they would seek and find extraordinary things instead of doing what men do in such circumstances, crave the return to normalcy. When a movement of the assemblage point is maximized, both the average man or the apprentice in sorcery becomes a sorcerer, because by maximizing that movement, continuity is shattered beyond repair. You maximize that movement by curtailing self-reflection. Moving the assemblage point or breaking one's continuity is not the real difficulty. The real difficulty is having energy. If one has energy, once the assemblage point moves, inconceivable things are there for the asking. Man's predicament is that he intuits his hidden resources, but he does not dare use them. This is why sorcerers say that man's plight is the counterpoint between his stupidity and his ignorance. Man needs now, more so than ever, to be taught new ideas that have to do exclusively with his inner world, sorcerer's ideas, not social ideas, ideas pertaining to man facing the unknown, facing his personal death. Now, more than anything else, he needs to be taught the secrets of the assemblage point. The spirit is indefinable. One cannot even feel it, much less talk about it. One can only beckon it by acknowledging its existence. The position of silent knowledge is called the third point because in order to get to it, one has to pass the second point, the place of no pity. Every human being has a capacity for that fluidity. For most of us, however, it is stored away and we never use it, except on rare occasions which are brought about by sorcerers or by dramatic natural circumstances, such as a life or death struggle. Only a human being who is a paragon of reason can move his assemblage point easily and be a paragon of silent knowledge. Only those who are squarely in either position can see the other position with clarity. That was the way the age of reason came into being. The position of reason was clearly seen from the position of silent knowledge. The one-way bridge from silent knowledge to reason is called concern. That is, the concern that true men of silent knowledge have about the source of what they know. And the other one-way bridge, from reason to silent knowledge, is called pure understanding. That is, the recognition that tells the man of reason that reason is only one island in an endless sea of islands. A human being who has both one-way bridges working is a sorcerer in direct contact with the spirit, the vital force that makes both positions possible. The spirit only listens when the speaker speaks in gestures, and gestures do not mean signs or body movements. but acts of true abandon, acts of largesse, of humor. As a gesture for the spirit, sorcerers bring out the best of themselves and silently offer it to the abstract. Sorcerers count their lives in hours. In 1 hour, it is possible for a sorcerer to live the equivalent in intensity of a normal life. This intensity is an advantage when it comes to storing information in the movement of the assemblage point. The assemblage point, with even the most minute shifting, creates totally isolated islands of perception. Information, in the form of experiences, in the complexity of awareness, can be stored there. But how can information be stored in something so vague? The mind is equally vague, and still you trust it because you're familiar with it. You don't yet have the same familiarity with the movement at the assemblage point, but it is just about the same. The information is stored in the experience itself. Later, when a sorcerer moves his assemblage point to the exact spot where it was, he relives the total experience. This sorcerer's recollection is the way to get back all the information stored in the movement of the assemblage point. Intensity is an automatic result of the movement of the assemblage point. Intensity, being an aspect of intent, is connected naturally to the shine of the sorcerer's eyes. In order to recall those isolated islands of perception, sorcerers need only intend the particular shine of their eyes associated with whatever spot they want to return to. Because his intensity rate is greater than normal, in a few hours a sorcerer can live the equivalent of a normal lifetime. His assemblage point, by shifting to an unfamiliar position, takes in more energy than usual. That extra flow of energy is called intensity.